Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 5 p.m. Stay tuned next for Flashpoints.
Today on Flashpoints, we present a special encore of our recent Haiti coverage of the parliamentary elections held there this past August 9th. We begin with political analyst Justin Gay in New York and Franz Jerome in Florida with their predictions of the outcome of the election 6 days before they occurred. We then feature an interview with Brian Kincannon of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, giving his views of their legitimacy. We end our encore presentation with an interview with Yvonne Kenny-San, a political activist who works closely with the Famille Lavalas Party, founded by former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. I'm Kevin Pina, filling in for Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints, your daily investigative news magazine. Stay tuned. So I'm going to bring on our first two analysts for our first program today. Joining me is Jocelyn Gay. She is a political analyst joining us from New York. Also on the line with us is our good friend Franz Jerome. He is also, no, I believe he's in Florida, aren't you?
Yes, happy to be with you.
Jocelyn, you there with us?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, friend.
Hi, Jocelyn.
Let's start with the big question. Why are, do you believe the upcoming parliamentary elections are important? I mean, there's discussion now. Some people still believe this election may not happen. On the other hand, there are people who are saying that with over 70% of the parties that are participating owing their allegiance to Marta Lee, and given that his THTK is using government funds to run their campaign, are these elections going to happen? And if they are, why are they important?
Well, you know, I believe they are very, very important. And that's why the powers that be are doing everything that they can to make sure that they are not elections. They are selections. It's a selection process. As a matter of fact, I don't believe that I heard it right. But somebody told me that the financing of the parties that was amended by the law, electoral law. I think that the finance department of Haiti gave $12,000 Haitian dollars, which is divided by 8 will give you the exact amount in American dollars. I will give you the number in a minute. That's what they gave the parties to run their campaign.
Well, that's not much.
So, excuse me?
That's not very much money.
Nope.
No. That's a joke. You know, I don't understand how, because if you divide it by 8, that's $1,562 that they give party. You know, there are how many senators, 20 senators being elected. There are deputies being elected all over the place. So if you're a viable party that has a representation at all levels, you know, what? They're going to give $5 to those senators. So that's what exemplifies the fact that it's a joke that those elections taking place. However, the people are determined to come out. So if and when the people are able to cast their vote in normal elections, the progressive movement in Haiti benefits from that. So their ploys may backfire and mobilize the people to come out and mass to vote. Unfortunately, the presidency is not one of the elections being run with the senator and deputy election, because the Haitians will not come out and mass for the presidency. However, I will say one thing. The Marta Lee parties that you mentioned before have billions of dollars in state funds. Because remember, Rivala Bless had net $1.9 billion in the treasury of the country that disappeared. Besides those other billions of dollars that Haiti, I think Haiti holds the Venezuela $3 billion now for oil. Those funds aren't accounted for. So, you know, we know they have plenty of money, and it is a disgrace what they are doing. And for many, many different reasons, the Electoral Council should have suspended all of these parties, because there are laws, there's a ceiling as to how much you can spend on an election. There are laws as to what you can say to people, and President Martelly, now President Martelly, as a campaigner in chief for PHTK, has violated all of these laws. And all these parties, as far as I'm concerned, should have been suspended. However, when you have dictatorship, because, you know, when I listen to former minister of Martelly, Mr. Colonel Medu, talking about how they are killing people in Cité Soleil, you know, I have to say that it is a repressive government. When you have a repressive government, no one dare say a word. And therefore, the media in Haiti is mute. They say nothing, and as if everything is normal. However, in this climate, we're going to have elections.
Well, let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that's the voice of my guest, Franz Jerome. He's a political analyst who comes on this program often to help us understand what is going on with the situation in Haiti. Also on the line is Jocelyn Gay. Jocelyn is also a political analyst. Jocelyn, I'm wondering here, if the U.S. is, I want a better word, is the blanc, right? The foreigners. the U.S., France, Canada, the so-called, you know, they put them in quotation marks, the international community is financing these elections, but they're not really financing the elections. What does it mean? I mean, is it that they don't want these to be credible elections? And is it possible that's because this is the first time in, what, 15 years that Lavalas has been allowed to participate?
First of all, let's start with a premise that would get us close to a good conclusion. Any country that is occupied cannot have legitimate elections, period.
And so you're talking about the United Nations military occupation.
Yeah, the country has been occupied by the United Nations forces, which is the remote control of the United States of America, of Canada, and of France. So it's a sham. They're going to have the elections because the barracudas and vultures are landing in Haiti so that they can legitimate crap. That's all. That's exactly what it is. As I was talking to you earlier, I said that they imposed on Haiti a carnival king, and he's continuing the carnival.
Michel Martelly.
Yes, I'm talking about Michel Martelly. Who else? So he loved carnival, and then the way he was directing the country is like a carnival. He disrespects everybody. Actually is below the sewer now, as far as his behavior. And so in this kind of situation, and a lot of the parties who were on the pavement, they were demonstrating to have him go with Minister, because he said it clearly, if Minister wasn't there, then the United Nations forces weren't there, he wouldn't have been able to stay. They were the forces who anchored him in Haiti. So he was practically ready to go when the people were on the pavement and they were saying he should go with Minister. And the U.S. and all the powers that be, as usual, created division among the P-heads of Haiti. And I'm sorry, I disrespected P's. And so the division happened, and then the people stopped warming the pavement to have him go. And then he's still there. And they're having that sham election. We know that every time a country is occupied, the people who occupy the country, they have to legitimate their pillage because they came to take something. If we had cactus only and just send Well, some greedy people will go after that anyway. But if we only had cactus and sand, they wouldn't be in Haiti. That's because we have a lot of wealth, in spite of the fact that they're trying to give the poorest country of the hemisphere as our middle name all the time. But we know better. So we have something for them to take. That's why they're there. Predators never go where there's no food. So they're there, and so they have to legitimate all what they're taking. So they have to put a puppet government. And Michel Martelly was the best of their puppet government, because even when the elections happened that they imposed him in power, Jude Celestin was there, and Maniga, Mrs. Maniga was there, even though those two weren't the best of anything either, but there are some places where they would not go. They had a little shred of dignity left. They wouldn't really sell everything lock, stock, and barrel. But Martelly will sell. He already sold his soul, so I don't think he has anything else for him to sell. But he will sell the whole country. And with what's been happening, I said that maybe the Haitian people, my people, should really get up and wake up. And because he still has space to go lower than where he is now, because he might do like Nero, set the country in fire and then take his keyboard and start singing while the country is burning. He can go there too, because he's under drugs, and when he's under drugs, he has no control. So the election is a sham. And so they're going to have it to legitimate the pillage. That's it.
Well, I'm not sure about the drug accusation, although several people have mentioned that his last few public performances, he actually performed publicly for a couple of the campaign rallies. There was questions about whether or not he was inebriated or not, particularly some of the crass comments he made about women and about gays, and just really vile comments that they, I guess most people were figuring people who weren't under the influence of something would not make. Franz, I want to get back to this question about Lavalas. Now, Fami Lavalas was a family, a party that was brutalized. We know that not only one coup, but two coups. The coup of 1991, they tried to destroy the base of the popular masses that elected Father Jean-Bertrand Aristide to the presidency in 1990. That brutal coup of September 30th, 1991, it lasted for 3 years. We know that almost 10,000 people were murdered and killed that belonged to that movement, supporters of Aristide. He then returned in 2004. We also know that he was elected a second time in 2000, and there was a second coup in 2004. Uh-huh. He returned in 1994 after the first coup. Then there was a second election in 2000. There was a second coup in 2004. We know that from 2004 to 2006, thousands more of the Fami Lavalas supporters were murdered in cold blood, shot during peaceful demonstrations, disappeared, as in the case of Pierre-Antoine Lovinsky, just brutalized. Of course, demonized by the international community as well. Aristide called everything from a tyrant to somebody who was arming child soldiers. I mean, people are well aware of those accusations against Aristide and Lavalas. And now here we are, 15 years later. This movement has not died. We have a new round of elections. And for the first time in 15 years, Lavalas is being able to be part of those elections. Franz, is it going to make a difference?
It's all a matter of enthusiasm. If the people come out and vote because they are enthusiastic about their participation, then definitely Lavalas will win. However, let me point something out very clearly. I don't believe that it is election. I believe that in order for Lavalas to win, especially in some remote part of the South, where all the South is, where the brother Lambert have been busting heads to win votes. I don't believe that those results will be legitimate results. So therefore, the securing of the result is more a function of how organized and how capable they are to resist the assault of the right wing in Haiti. Because no matter how we look at it, Martelly and his gang, they are right-wing gangs. In the past, he used to be running the street with the military in 1991. Today, he runs the street with well-armed people who are assaulting the people. And I agree with Jocelyn that all of the people of Haiti were insulted, but he did so through a woman because he loves insulting women. Mm. And that's the man. Because I'm pointing that out, because Mrs. Clinton is responsible for him being president of Haiti today. Mm. Now, what I'm saying is that they have systematically organized to stop people from participating in these elections. Will they succeed? I don't believe they will succeed. But they have been implementing a systematic process of raising the level of violence to scare people off. Will people be scared? Yes, they will be scared. Will they come out anyway? Yes, I believe they will come out anyway. So we have to remain very, very vigilant to make sure that those brave people who are going to confront all types of pressure so that they can cast their vote get to do so and get to go back home after they cast their vote. Because the United Nations is not doing anything to protect the people. As a matter of fact, most places in Haiti, they have removed their troops when we supposedly need them most, because they are supposed to be protecting democracy. But we know what that means in Haiti, because what has been taking place ever since the United Nations has stepped into Haiti is far from democratic.
And that's the voice of our guest, Franz Jerome. He's a political analyst coming to us from Florida. Also on the line is a political commentator, Jocelyn Gay. Jocelyn, what's your response to that question? Is it going to make a difference that Lavalas is in these elections?
Well, the difference that it will make if Lavalas really get in power is that the people will have a little bit more room to maneuver. That's the only thing. But with the occupation, there's no way, because getting the power is one thing, keeping it is another thing. You just reminded us that there were two coup d'etat when Aristide was in power. The same enemies are still on the ground. And they still, even if Lavalas is just going to just mouth latitudes, the fact that they can put a lot of people in the street make them a danger for people who want to control the country. Once you have a little attachment to the people, you say, and the people say, yes, we want, yes, we can, you're a danger. So with the occupation, with a so-called peace troop, please. What peace? The United Nations troops have been there. There have been more kidnappings. I have about three incidents that just happened. Somebody was coming from the bank and then they were mugged. Kidnapping is still going on. It might not make the news, but it's still going on. And the rape is still going on. All these things are still going on. The disease that the United Nations brought is still making a lot of deaths. People are still dying from cholera. That hasn't stopped. So in all this trauma that the people are going through, they are resilient, that's true. But sometimes something gives. And in this situation, even if Lavalas gets into power and they have constituted some cadres this time, not just Aristide being the savior coming to power and then there was no cadre, but there are some cadres nowadays. But keeping the power with the enemies still on the ground, unless they are vigilant, the people are really vigilant when they elect their representative, we're still going to be in the same mess that we were before Lavalas was taken out of the elections when Préval, under Préval, when Préval took Lavalas out of the elections after he left power. So, we're still having a lot of challenges. As I said, the predators and vultures, they are down there. That means there's going to be an election. But if the people are not standing in the street and they really keep their bulletin in their hands and say, this is who I voted for, you're not going to just come up with some other people that we haven't voted for at all, and they stay vigilant, they're going to have another coup d'etat in this election. So I hope that they are able to prevail.
That's quite a prediction, Jocelyn. What should we be watching for in the upcoming legislative elections?
One thing, I know I'm looking at pictures from the South right now where, you know, people have participated in huge numbers to the Senator Exumé's rally. Now, what should we look
at? Which party is Exumé with? Which party is Exumé with?
With Abalak, of course.
Okay, I just want you to say.
He was in the South, I believe it was, I don't know exactly, and I don't want to stop, I don't want to be distracted. But one thing I'm going to tell you is that what we should look for is the violence. Like I said, that former minister from Martinique's government, that he would say that because Martini was pressured in Cité Soleil the next day, the gang that ruled for Martini went to Cité Soleil and systematically killed people. As a matter of fact, he was on one of the most listened to programs in Haiti, Ramassé, Saturday morning on Radio Caraïbe, and he said that they tap, got people to get off and shot them.
Taps are like taxis, yeah.
And that's what a former minister of Martinique said. And what he was upset at is the fact that the media in Haiti is not even relating this crime.
No.
It is ridiculous. To me, the pressure that they have to, the pain that they have to inflict on the Lavalas supporters in order to get them to stop their participation is atrocious.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank you so much. Again, that's the voice of my guest, Fran Jerome, coming to us from Florida, and Jocelyn Gay, both political analysts. We were discussing the upcoming election cycle in Haiti, which we're going to be covering closely here over the next few weeks on Flashpoints. Well, we're going to turn our attention back to Haiti and the recent parliamentary elections there. The first parliamentary elections held under Michel Martelly, which were greatly delayed. They were supposed to be held in 2011. But now we're hearing voices of contention that, in fact, there were many irregularities to the voting. The Conseil Electoral Provisoire, which is the election council in Haiti, said that only then less than 5% of the polling stations were affected by irregularities and violence. However, we're hearing now from other organizations that it could be as high as 50%. Now joining us is the director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, Brian Concannon. Welcome back to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Thank you, Kevin. It's always great to be with you.
Thank you. Hey, so give us just sort of your first general impressions about the parliamentary elections. Maybe give us a sense of how many folks on the ground IJDH was working with to sort of monitor the process.
So the elections happened on Sunday, and they were national. They were first round for parliament. We worked with a coalition of people. We had a couple of our own people on the ground, but it was mostly working with other grassroots groups and some progressive American observers, but also just trying to monitor everything, social media, internet, radio reports, and things like that. And the reason why we felt it was important to monitor it was that in the past, as Flashpoints listeners know, there's been a great discrepancy between what happens on the ground and what gets reported in the mainstream press and by the large governments. And we felt that that was a risk for these elections, and that certainly turned out to be the case.
Well, in what way did that turn out to be the case? Can you give us some sense of what occurred with the reports that you guys did compile of what actually happened on Election Day?
So right from the very beginning, when the polls started opening at 6 o'clock in the morning, there were reports from a broad range of sources, foreign media in Haiti, Haitian media, grassroots groups from a range of political perspectives, political parties. Pretty much everyone was saying, here we're having serious problems. We're having voting centers that aren't opening. We're having voting centers that are being closed down by violence. There's lots of intimidation. A lot of voters who feel they can't vote. And throughout the day, we're hearing this fairly consistent and building group of very troubling reports. And then when you started getting the responses from the international community, especially the European Union Observation Mission and the UN Peacekeeping Mission and some U.S.-financed observation delegations, all they were reporting was was good news. And not that good news wasn't happening. There were lots of places people were able to vote, but there were so many places where they weren't that it was raising red flags for anybody who was serious. And it was clear that these people were ignoring the red flags in order to downplay that violence. And I think the epitome of that was when the head of the European Union said that the elections were operating in near perfect normalcy. And this was done in the late afternoon when it was clearly documented on all platforms that there were serious problems.
So, Brian, let's get into some of the specifics of the allegations of violence that occurred on Sunday during the parliamentary elections. What were some of those incidences that you were hearing?
It started the night before the polls when there were several voting centers that were actually burnt down. It had been building in the few weeks before the election. There were several incidents of attacks of political party candidates and supporters, and even of electoral offices in regional capitals. But on the election day, it started off with burning down in the early morning of some voting centers, and it continued throughout the day. The main problems were political party supporters, and some of them officially accredited, who were engaged in discussions that got out of hand, became violent. In many cases, the voting centers were trashed and ballots were dispersed all over the place. We don't know if that was used as a cover for ballots to be actually stolen. We have heard reports of candidates coming with guns and forcing voting center supervisors to accept pre-marked ballots. There were, I believe, three people who were killed in the day, including one political party activist who was doing get-out-the-vote activities. So there's certainly a lot of specific incidents, but what is probably even more concerning is the impact that these incidents had on other voters. So obviously, if a voting center was closed, you had anywhere from 5 to 20,000 people who weren't allowed to vote there, but that probably also impacted many other people at other voting centers who decided it wasn't safe to vote, that they were going to stay home because of the violence.
So this was being announced as these attacks were happening at polling stations and the ones from the previous evening. These were being announced over Haitian media on the morning and the day of the election. So people were hearing that there was this violence out there. And I guess the argument is that this couldn't help but have an impact on whether people went to the polls or not.
Especially in the context of Haiti, where, as you know, there's a history of electoral violence. And in fact, one of the places that was closed down the earliest was the Argentine Bellegarde School on Rue Vaillant, which was the site of a very notorious massacre in 1987 elections. So, yeah, this was obviously going through voters' heads, and I think it did have an impact on voters coming out and participating on that day.
Now let's talk about the poll watchers. Traditionally, parties that are involved in a contest, an electoral contest, will be able to have representatives at various polling stations, if not all of them, in order to sort of make sure that everything is done properly and correctly, that their party gets a fair shake. Now, I understand that did not happen during these elections.
Yeah, the general theory is that if you have people representing a broad enough spectrum of parties, that they will supervise each other and prevent fraud from happening. But there are ways of gaming the system, and what a lot of groups traditionally in the past have been trying to get people basically representing them, even if they formally represent another party. And in this case, accreditations were not delivered in time. A lot of parties said they never got them or only got a few of them. From a pretty broad spectrum of reports, the two parties that did not have problems with their accreditations were a party called Bouclier and a party called PHTK, both of which are associated with Haiti's president, Martelly. And so there are many parties, especially on the left side of the spectrum, who are saying that they were unable to get their mandataires into many key places, and that there is a deep concern that allowed the mandataire process to be gamed, which would allow fraud to happen in the voting booth without anybody complaining about it.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And that's the voice of our guest, Brian Concannon, with the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. We're discussing this parliamentary elections that occurred there. Well, it sounds as if PHTK, President Michel Martelly's party, and the Associated Party Bouclier had an advantage. But isn't it true they also had an advantage prior to the elections with campaigning during the campaign time?
They certainly had an obvious advantage in resources. No one's quite sure where that advantage came. Many people are saying it's from the government, and there actually is proof that some of it came from the government in the sense that government vehicles were cited at campaign events. But many people believe that government funds were taken to pay for posters and things like that, that those two parties had and that none of the other parties were able to put up. The 80s elections are supposed to have a public financing component, but in this case, there were two problems with that. One, it was delivered late, in less than a week before the election, so that really didn't allow parties to use that money well for these elections. And second, the president has packed the amount of parties. There's an absurd amount of parties in Haiti. It's over 100 that were participating in these elections. Most of them have no chance of winning any of the seats. Over half of them, by most estimates, are in one way or another connected with President Martelly. And so people suspect the president and his associates of gaming the system of campaign financing by just having parties that are out there that will get their share of the money, even though they have no chance of realistically winning. And that takes the money away from the other parties that are poorly financed but have popular support.
Now, it seems that part of what also gives credibility to a lot of the arguments of the irregularities and the violence and the unfairness of these elections is that President Michel Martelly himself is, there's continuing scandal swirling around him and his administration, isn't there?
Yes, there is. And if you look at the whole context, you look at these things, that the violence seems to be disproportionately done by the president's associates, that they apparently gained the mandataire system and the public financing system, that a lot of the places where voting was closed down are in places where the government is not expected to do well. And then you put it in the context of no elections at all for 4 years and a series of financial and other scandals breaking out within the president's party. There seems to be a fairly strong pattern that this is an attempt to prolong a very troubling regime for another 5 years through electoral manipulation.
Well, and it also seems, step from all indications, that the U.S. government, that the Obama administration, is not going to have a problem with these elections, that in fact they are leading the chorus saying that the irregularities were too small, that overall these were good elections.
Again, this fits the longer pattern. This has been happening for 4 years, that every time that there has been well-documented reports of problems by the government, especially its attempt to manipulate the electoral process, the U.S. government has always downplayed that, and it's downplayed the opposition. They've always tried to say, oh, it's only a very small minority of people in Haiti who are opposing the government, which is time and again demonstrated that's not true, that most civil society in Haiti and most political parties with demonstrated electoral success do want the fair elections. But it does appear that the U.S. government, along with the European Union, the Organization of American States, and the international community in general in Haiti, is willing to go along with the problematic elections and also willing to openly try to downplay the very serious problem.
Now, of course, there are presidential elections, which are coming October the 25th, and that's considered the really big prize for the parties that are contesting the elections. More than 50 parties running. I'm just wondering, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but I'm wondering your learned opinion. Where's this going to go at this point? Where do we go out of this sort of scandal swirling around these parliamentary elections? And, of course, I think there's going to be a lot to be said when the results are announced.
Yeah, that's really what's at stake. And I think that in many ways these elections are precursors to the next round of elections. And if violence is allowed to go unchecked, if gaming the system through public financing and through the observer system is allowed to happen, It's going to happen again next time at a much larger level, and you're going to have even more distortions in an election where the stakes are going to be much higher. And so that's why people in Haiti are taking to the streets, they're taking to the airwaves, they're writing reports. There's a real strong effort by grassroots groups, political parties, and civil society organizations to really make sure that the word is out there that these are problems and that they need to be fixed before the next election.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Again, that's the voice of our guest, Brian Kincannon. Brian is with the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. They had observers. They were watching closely the electoral process for Parliament. Brian, we're going to get back to you, and we're going to keep on this story. We appreciate you filling us in today on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Well, I appreciate you covering Haiti so well.
Right there waiting for
Now joining me from Ilavache, Haiti, is our good friend Yvonne Kenny-san. Yvonne, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you very much, Kevin, and I'm happy to be with you.
Thank you so much. Well, listen, let's get right into this. What is your representation of the elections August the 9th? And has Fami Lavalas, given any official statement about them?
Well, Dr. Nasi has given, the official statement that was 2 days after the elections. Everyone who was there, who was in Haiti, knows what happened there. That wasn't an election. That was an attempt to steal. And that, in spite of the fact that the Electoral Council did yesterday or the day before condemn the action of 14 individuals, but this is far, far from being the step that ought to be taken.
Right. The Provisional Election Council announced yesterday that they were suspending 14 candidates, outright kicking them out of the results of the elections because of their being involved in violence at polling stations. Is that right?
Everyone witnessed what happened. They tried to steal the election. They brutalized some people. The Provisional Council, the CEP, waited until 11 o'clock the night before to give some mandate to some political parties, where as the parties close to the government got theirs Wednesday.
These are permission to observe the polls.
Exactly. And the three parties that are close to the government got theirs Wednesday night or Thursday morning.
So in most of the polling stations, only the president, Michel Martelly's PHTK party, had their accreditation to actually watch the polls and observe the elections.
Exactly. And then some of these guys, they will tell you they voted 10, 15 times.
Wow.
There is no shame about it. The police stood by and watched those guys from the government party, PHTK and Bouclier, and the party of President Préval. They were all doing their things.
So PHTK, Bouclier, which is associated with the first lady of Haiti,
the first lady,
Sophie Martelly.
And And the third one with the platform Vérité, which is Préval. And these are the same parties. They waited until 1 week before the election. They were supposed to help the campaign of the political parties. They waited until 1 week before to give the parties so less, so the money they gave. We were not able to give $1,000 to our candidate.
Well, there's a campaign financing law in Haiti, which says
exactly.
That the state is supposed to give money to each of the political parties to contest the elections. But what you're saying is they only received a little tiny bit of money 1 week before the elections themselves.
One week before. And
wow.
It was so little that we couldn't give $1,000 to our candidates. And while we're watching the parties close to the government, they had billboards all over the place, all over the country. I was surprised to see how many billboards they had in Kai, all the way down going to Port Salut. Each one of these billboards cost between $10,000 and $15,000.
Wow. Where are they getting the money
from? They're talking about drug monies, they're talking about monies that the government stole from the people, they're talking about all these contracts that are given to the Dominican Republic, when the Dominican Republic is kicking us out. You see, when you watch all of these and you're wondering, you see what's happening right now with the Dominican Republic and the reason that we have so many problems fighting it is because that the entire world was with us on that issue. President Martelly kicked everybody out and took over, made a deal, and then less than a year later, everything is coming back just the way it was before. It's like he told them, wait, don't do anything right now. And what's happening now is that they're kicking people out all over the place.
Yvonne, just so I'm clear, so you think there's a direct connection between it being elections in Haiti right now and that this is happening with the Dominican Republic?
Of course. If you remember in 1990, personally, I don't think the Dominican Republic is going to send a massive amount of Haitians out. It's kicking them out right now. They're waiting. And when we take power, what's going to happen, they're going to start shipping those people to us all over the place, and this will be an attempt to destabilize our government. They did that in 1990. And a few months later, we had the coup that overthrew President Aristide.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Now, they're flashing that, they're sending a few people here and there, but it is just like a warning. If they don't get what they want, this is what they can do to us.
So what you're saying is that, and I've made this observation as well, that if you watch this over many years, over a couple decades, you see that the issue of Haitian refugees or Haitians being sent, forced back to Haiti, has long been used to destabilize, to affect the political climate inside of Haiti.
Exactly. And it's deja vu all over again. And it's not just that. There are a lot of people that are returning right now.
Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that is the voice of my guest, Yvonne Kenny-san. Yvonne is very close to the campaign of Fami Lavalas, and especially the candidate, Maurice Narcisse, the Fami Lavalas presidential candidate. Well, Yvonne, I'm wondering, I hear reports just this morning that even prior to the CEP, now they've suspended these 14 people, candidates, they've kicked them out of the elections who were involved, they say were involved in violence. Most of them, by the way, associated with President Michel Martelly's PHTK party and Préval's Vérité party. But now I understand that even before the announcement of the results, which is supposed to be sometime today, there are protesters gathering in front of the Conseil Electoral Provisoire, the Provisional Election Council in Port-au-Prince right now as we're speaking. And they are denouncing what they're calling a coup d'état électoral, or an electoral coup. What do you know about that?
That's exactly what it is. And this is one reason why Fami Lavalas always said, election, yes, but we have to stay mobilized. And that's what's happening. They cannot have the real result. The reasons are very simple. The government realized that it would be very difficult for them to beat Dr. Narcisse at the presidential election. So they're trying to make sure that they get the parliamentary election in order to create some balance and be able, because there's a lot happening in Haiti that the next administration is going to have to look at. The amount of money that this government just stole from the people,
wow,
it's unbelievable. You look at how much money the Clinton foundation and where they spend that money in Haiti. And you're wondering, and after that they're telling you they spent $4-5 billion. But Haiti is worse today than it was the day after the earthquake. Of course there are a few buildings that were put in place, but is that amount to $5 billion? And the answer is no. You have all those places that are boarded up with those yellow or red. But nothing has been done inside of these places. They destroy a whole bunch of houses pretending that they were going to build government offices. They kick those people out, giving them less than 24 hours warning. But when you look at it right now, nothing has been done. And all that money, they just built an overpass, charging the people $26 million for an overpass. But if you look at that thing, there is no way that thing can cost more than $5 million.
Well, Yvonne, I was amazed to hear that they spent $38 million on those elections. But when I look at the reports, and I had reporters on the ground also observing in several locations, people were being forced to vote in dark rooms over a pile of bricks on the ground and a cardboard separator, squatting on the ground in the dark trying to vote. I didn't see $38 million, but I was amazed to hear that figure.
Oh, there is nothing to justify the amount of money that they're saying is being spent. They spend there. Nothing at all.
On the elections.
The election, yes. Some of the places that we went to were filthy. In some places, you had like three, four polling posts in a small room that is less than 10 by 10. And on top of that, you had five observers from the president's political parties and his wife. There are some schools that I went to one of them, the gate was locked. And it was 9 o'clock in the morning. When I got in there, so because of the fact that I was an observer, they had to let me in. But when I got in there, I couldn't understand what was happening. You see? So all of these, when you put them together, makes you wonder, was the intent? Having election was, is that what they intended to do?
I want to talk about also how these elections are historic. This is the first time in 15 years that Fami Lavalas has been allowed to participate in elections. Fami Lavalas decided to take this opportunity and run candidates for parliament. They're running a candidate for president and local positions as well throughout the country, municipal positions. Well, I'm wondering, you know, Aristide was put under house arrest. The house arrest mandate, if you will, the subpoena was never lifted, so technically he's still under house arrest. But just yesterday, the United States, the Department of Justice, gave an early release to a man named Bédouin Jacques Quétin. Now, Bédouin Jacques Quétin, according to the Miami Herald, and I've only heard the Miami Herald say this, they're calling him the Pablo Escobar of Haiti. I've never heard anybody but the Miami Herald refer to him as that, but the Pablo Escobar of Haiti. But he also very famously accused President Aristide of having received payments by drug traffickers. Of course, Aristide's attorney, who's a good friend of ours, Ira Kurzban, has denied that many times on this program. Ira Kurzban has dared the U.S. government and the Department of Justice to proceed against Aristide because he said clearly on many occasions there's absolutely not a shred of evidence to support it. So the U.S. government never went after Aristide. But Jacques Quétin, who the Miami Herald is calling the Pablo Escobar of Haiti, was just forcibly returned to Haiti by the Department of Justice yesterday. Do you find that coincidental?
Nothing in Haiti is coincidental. Not when it comes to the to the embassy, Washington, or the U.S. government. But let's look at it another way. Right now, there are no drug dealers in Haiti. That's what it looks like. There were when Aristide was president, and right now there is none. You remember Sanson La Familia?
Yes, absolutely. Sanson La Familia. Yeah.
Yes. That guy, everybody knows. He's a kidnapper, he's a drug dealer, he's everything in the book. If you're talking of the Pablo Escobar of Haiti, he should be the one.
And this is the guy who was released by a hand-picked judge by President Martelly.
By Martelly.
Right.
Just to be out. The other thing also, it's not like the U.S. Embassy doesn't know about Trump and La Familia. why don't they arrest him?
Right, this guy's running around Haiti free now.
Only arrest people in Haiti when there's a government they don't like. You see, all of these things, all it does is discredit the U.S. administration when it comes to drug trafficking and other things. This is a big problem. We have to have one standard. If somebody's a drug dealer, you go and arrest him. Preval signed that treaty with the U.S. government, something that he should have never done. Because, in fact, that's giving an excuse to the U.S. administration to go in Haiti and arrest on the false pretext anybody they want to.
Right, and I guess what I'm getting at is that the government of Michel Martelly, he's also had prosecutors who have re-brought up this issue about drug trafficking and Quetant. And now here's Quetant back in Haiti just before the presidential elections. Isn't that sort of a warning to President Aristide? You better keep your mouth shut.
Listen, it's hard to give any warning to President Aristide because the only President Aristide's real power, real force is in the people of Haiti. You see, and the day he loses that support, then President Aristide will have no more power. You know, but the people of Haiti knows that he is our defender. He is the one who stood up and is still standing up for the people. He is the one who is concentrating on educating the people. He is the one who built a university for the poor, the less fortunate, to be able to get an education. You see, when everybody else is sending their children to study in the Dominican Republic and other places, he is staying in Haiti helping the people. And we are very well aware of that. And that is why when they wanted to arrest him, you see, in front of his house, 24 hours a day, there were people who basically live there. Because they didn't want anyone to think that they can do whatever they want to President Aristide. Then they came out with that house arrest, something that no one in Haiti ever took seriously.
So you don't think that the U.S. deporting Jacques Quetant, who made these accusations against President Aristide, is a warning? You don't think that the, I mean, because they didn't have to do it. They didn't have to return him right now before the elections, right?
They did not. But this is not the only thing they're going to try to pull. You see, this is just the beginning. You will see a lot more as days go by, as we get closer to the election. A lot more is going to you know, there's going to be a lot more warning. And we're going to take them at face value, you know. It's not that we're going to dismiss them. We're not going to dismiss anything. But we're going to be we are very mindful of where we are and what we are up against.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, and we're going to call you back again. Hopefully, we've had a hard time reaching you sometimes, but I'm really happy that we got you today. It wasn't the best connection, but I can hear you clearly. I hope our listeners can, too. Yvonne Kenny-San in Haiti. He is closely associated with Fami Lavalas. We're discussing the August 9th parliamentary elections there, which were marred by violence, which many people are saying should be annulled. There are demonstrators in front of the election council offices as I'm speaking to Yvonne. It's calling it an electoral coup d'etat. Yvonne Kenny-San, thank you so much for joining us today on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
You're welcome.
And now let's continue our coverage of the potential announcement of the results of the elections, parliamentary elections held in Haiti on August the 9th. Now joining me via telephone from Florida is Franz Jerome. Franz, welcome back to Flashpoints.
I'm happy to be with you.
So we're going to follow up on Yvonne Kenny-San, who I just interviewed. And I want to know, what are you seeing now?
Well, first things first, I know you know about Cayo Fiesta is a festival, Caribbean festival, and I think this year it's being held in Haiti. And a strange coincidence is that the United States is participating actively in this Caribbean festival this year. Well, people can read into this whatever they want, but one thing we know is that it is something that they are advertising putting Haiti on the tourist map, potentially.
So this is a big tourist event that's going on in Haiti, and it's happening right during the same time that the CEP is supposed to announce the results of the elections. And, of course, the elections are very controversial.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. The word is in Haiti that Martelly would like for them to announce the results after the event. And some people, some ministers in the government want it done as predicted by the electoral decree. However, I doubt that it will be announced today, even though, you know, there will be a lot of leaks and other happenings. But I know one thing for sure, you know, this morning again, and I don't even think that they realize, Martelly realizes what he's saying when he's asking them for a delay, because the more time goes on, the more people are emboldened, because they expected a systematic repression if they tried to put the truth out. And the truth is coming out slowly, with a candidate coming from all corners of the country. You know, everything is centralized in Port-au-Prince, and coming to a Port-au-Prince media and denouncing what happened in their area. And the more they talk, the more we realize that it was a much more generalized and systematic, because they, you know, it was like an army deployed that night, the night before the election, throughout the country to suppress the vote.
According to Ivan Kenny's son, he said that the CEP is applying a Band-Aid. He called it a Band-Aid when they're merely forcing 14 candidates out of the races. They're discluding them completely from the election process because of their alleged role in violence at the polls.
Well, I think that is being nice to them, because I believe that they are part of the problem. And one indicator is simple. They were supposed to distribute proxy badges to the people who are going to represent the candidates at the polling station.
So the party poll workers, yeah.
Yes. And what happens is that they delayed, and they only delivered to some parties like a few hours before the vote, when the parties that caused the turmoil in Haiti, which is PHTK, Bouclier, Vérité, and TID, the prime minister's party, they had their way ahead of time. And the more information is coming out, we realize that Petit Dessalines also may have received their badges way ahead of time, before the other political parties that only received theirs hours before the vote.
Petit Dessalines is the party of Maurice Jean-Charles, yes.
So you know, it is very interesting that they got their patches early. So people are wondering what role they have, in La Paix as well, which is Jules Celestin's party with Anacassis Jean-Hector. They got their patches early. So people in Haiti, the population, views all the parties that got their badges early as part of a group of parties that had agreed to divide the vote and exclude the people's vote.
Well, we'll leave it there. Again, thank you, Franz Jerome, talking about the elections held August the 9th in Haiti.
Well, I hope I help people understand better what's going on in Haiti.
You always do a great job. Thank you, Franz.
Thank you.
That wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our co-host and senior producer is Miguel Gavala-Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. Our interns for today have been Yusuf Fahimedin, Jorge Martinez, and Kiret Upal. For more information about the show, to listen or to download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or check out our SoundCloud page by looking up Flashpoints. To contact Dennis Bernstein, email him at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. I'm senior producer Kevin Pina, signing off. Thank you for listening.
Hello there. I'm Quincy McCoy, General Manager of KPFA, inviting you to join us Thursday, October 22nd, when New York Times bestselling author David Talbot discusses his jolting new book, The Devil's Chessboard, Alan Dulles, the CIA, and the Rise of America's Secret Government. David Talbot is the founder and former CEO of Salon.com and the author of bestsellers Brothers and The Seasons of the Witch. I look forward to talking with David about the rise of America's secret government at the First Congregational Church in Berkeley, 2345 Channing Way. There is wheelchair access at this important KPFA event. Advance tickets are available at brownpapertickets.com and supportive independent bookstores, or you can find out more information at kpfa.org. For David Talbot, live, October 22nd. See you there.